Divided Kingdom, the evening news program from a Christian vantage that many of you have come to know and trust. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly. Lou Caverly and I have been bringing you this program since the year 2005 on a network. We really signed the contract a little bit earlier in the year 2003, and we are really lifted by some of the letters that you have recently written to us and a few contributions. And if any of you would like to help us, summer is usually our hardest time to stay on the air. You can write any communication you wish to Lou Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and the post office box is 28 Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And again, the P.O. box is 28 Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And here we are at the end of June, and there's some very heartening news going on in America and some of the trends worldwide. So we have a lot to bring to you, and we are glad to hear that some of you are sharing with others, telling others about our program. Remember that you can tell them to go to our archives, thedividedkingdom.org. Again, that's thedividedkingdom.org, and you can listen to our past programs. You can also visit Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net. Look at their website and see when we're on, and you could click on an app there to hear us. We're on there on Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. And, of course, we're on WWCR, going out all over the world, all the shortwave, all of the Christian pastors that you'll hear. We love to hear Pastor Bob Martin, who comes on right after us on 4.840 megahertz. And we're on Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on 4.840 megahertz. And, of course, you can hear us on the Internet, WWCR.com. Click on Transmitter 3. Well, let's just kick off with some wonderful news. As a preface to this, we saw an article in the Washington Times Tuesday, May the 1st, and the headline was, Cecile Richards' exit leaves abortion provider Planned Parenthood in disarray. Organizations seeing fewer women under federal investigation and facing the loss of taxpayer funding. Cecile Richards received a hero send-off on her last day as president of Planned Parenthood, but pro-life activists say her uncompromising stance on abortion and alliance with the Democratic Party have left the organization on shaky ground. During her 12-year tenure, which officially came to an end Monday, Ms. Richards made Planned Parenthood into a political powerhouse that routinely spends tens of millions of dollars to elect Democrats to office. Yet growing political influence and increased taxpayer funding coincided with fewer medical services, fewer patient visits, massive clinic closures, and more abortions. Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life of America, said Planned Parenthood became, quote, an organization obsessed with abortion, end of quote, on Ms. Richards' watch. Cecile Richards leaves Planned Parenthood in disarray, seeing fewer women under federal investigation, facing the loss of taxpayer funding, Ms. Hawkins said. It's too bad she made ending life more important than helping women. Ms. Richards oversaw the performance of more than 3.5 million abortions during her tenure at Planned Parenthood. The number of abortions performed at Planned Parenthood has increased by nearly 11% since 2006, Ms. Richards' first year in the job, despite a more than 23% decline in patient visits. James Studnicki, Vice President and Director of Data Analytics for the Pro-Life Charlotte Lozier Institute, co-authored a paper recently published in the Open Journal of Preventive Medicine, which shows the national abortion rate has sharply declined over the same time that Planned Parenthood has seen a steady uptick in the procedure. He said the data strongly suggests that Planned Parenthood has actively propped up a national abortion rate that has otherwise seen large declines to their obvious financial benefit. More than 3 million abortions that might have been avoided can be attributed to Planned Parenthood's intervention in the abortion market, Mr. Studnicki said in a statement. Chuck Donovan, president of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, said it's no accident that Planned Parenthood has a commanding share of the U.S. abortion market. This study shows beyond doubt that Planned Parenthood's commanding market share of U.S. abortions is no accident, Mr. Donovan said in a statement. Policymakers are fully justified in taking this fact into account as they decide how to allocate public money. Data also suggests that the emphasis on abortion has come at the expense of other procedures. The number of cancer screenings performed at Planned Parenthood declined every year that Ms. Richards was president. The organization performed 200% more cancer screenings in 2006 than in 2017, the most recent year for which data are available. Planned Parenthood also showed little interest in prenatal services during Ms. Richards' tenure. Abortions outnumbered prenatal services by a ratio of more than 44 to 1 last year. The number of Planned Parenthood facilities peaked in 2008 at 880. Today, there are fewer than 600 clinics. If economic forces don't put Planned Parenthood out of business, there's a good chance political powers will. The Republican Party, galvanized by reports that Planned Parenthood trafficked in baby body parts from abortions, has never been more committed to taking taxpayers out of the abortion business. President Trump is reportedly considering a regulation. Now, we're going to give you an update, aren't we? Of course, they were going to prohibit recipients of Title X grants, which are earmarked for family planning services, from performing abortions. The policy could cost Planned Parenthood $50 million to $60 million annually. Ms. Hawkins said Planned Parenthood deserves blame for hollowing out the Democratic Party over the past decade. She pointed out that the party has lost more than 1,030 elected seats, including the presidency, since 2008. Ms. Hawkins said when the pro-life generation says, "I'm with her," they mean pre-born women. But pro-choice activists started the Twitter hashtag Thank You Cecile on Monday to mark her last day at the abortion giant. Amanda Littman, former email marketing director for Hillary Clinton's campaign, said Planned Parenthood has literally saved lives because of Ms. Richards' spine of steel. She thanked Ms. Richards for refusing to compromise on our rights and for standing up with poise, humor, and grace against every single challenge. In an interview Monday on CNN's New Day, Ms. Richards said the country has made enormous progress, and that's a quote, during her time leading Planned Parenthood. I have to interject, 3.5 million babies murdered? That's enormous progress? I think not. Out here in the heartland, we don't view it like that. We view it as a horrendous, abominable crime to God Almighty. We view it as the culture of death. We view it as judgment on America if it doesn't change. But back to the article. The daughter of former Texas Governor Ann Richards, she refused to rule out a run for elected office. I don't know what's next, but I'm excited to explore everything, she said. I know that I'll be very focused in the next few months on making sure every woman in this country is registered to vote, is activated, and goes to the polls in November. Spoken, I say, like a true opportunist. Now, we have a lot of good news. We have an update. Lou, let's find out about the High Court, what it did.
High Court backs speech rights of pro-life pregnancy centers. This was from the Washington Times, June 27th, 2018, by Alex Sawyer and Bradford Richardson. California can't force pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to promote abortion as a health care option, the Supreme Court ruled Tuesday, saying the state's attempt to do so violated the group's First Amendment speech rights. The justices, in a 5-4 ruling, said a 2015 state law requiring the centers to post notices about obtaining an abortion, including state assistance in paying for the procedure, amounted to government-coerced speech. Justice Clarence Thomas wrote for the majority, quote, "The people lose when the government is the one deciding which ideas should prevail," unquote. California argued that the law was needed to educate low-income women with state-funded services. Backers also said they feared women seeking abortions were being duped by the pro-life centers. But the pro-life centers claimed discrimination because of their views. In posting the notices, they said they were being forced to advocate for a procedure to which they vehemently object. Justice Thomas agreed, saying the law specifically targeted clinics with pro-life beliefs instead of all clinics throughout the state. He said if the goal was merely information, then the state had other options. He wrote, quote, California could inform low-income women about its services without burdening a speaker with unwanted speech, he wrote. Most obviously, it could inform the women itself with a public information campaign. Justice Anthony M. Kennedy, who signed the main opinion, wrote a concurrence saying the law appeared intended to punish those who held pro-life views. He said, quote, it does appear that viewpoint discrimination is inherent in the design and structure of this act. This law is a paradigm example of the serious threat presented when government seeks to impose its own message in the place of individual speech, thought, and expression, Justice Kennedy wrote. The court's four liberal-leaning justices dissented, led by Justice Stephen G. Breyer. They said California had a valid interest in requiring that the information be posted. Justice Breyer said the majority ruling could create a slew of litigation, since many laws regulate people's behavior or speech. Quote, virtually every disclosure law could be considered content-based, for virtually every disclosure law requires individuals to speak a particular message, he said. Signed by Governor Jerry Brown, a Democrat, the law required some licensed medical centers in the state to display a sign reading, quote, California has public programs that provide immediate, free, or low-cost access to comprehensive family planning services, including all FDA-approved methods of contraception, prenatal care, and abortion for eligible women. To determine whether you qualify, contact the county social services number at, and then it would give the telephone number, unquote. The notice had to be at least 8.5 inches by 11 inches in size, displayed in a, quote, clear and conspicuous manner, unquote, written in no less than 48-point type and included in all of the clinic's print and online advertisements. The sign also had to be written in English and any other primary, and this is in quotes, primary threshold languages, unquote, required at the country, at the county level. That means the sign had to be posted in 12 languages in Los Angeles County. Clinics that failed to comply risked a fine of $500 for a first offense and $1,000 for each subsequent one. Hawaii and Illinois have similar laws on the books. Pro-life advocates applauded the ruling. Quote, these centers exist to offer women a clear alternative to abortion, and the abortion lobby bullied them all the way to the Supreme Court because they could not tolerate authentic choice for women, said Ashley McGuire, senior fellow at the Catholic Association. She went on to say, our First Amendment right to freedom of speech not only protects the right to speak out, it protects the right not to speak. Michael Ferris, president of Alliance Defending Freedom, a religious liberty law firm that represented the challengers to California's law, said the ruling should set a standard. He said, tolerance and respect for good faith, differences of opinion are essential in a diverse society like ours. They enable us to coexist peacefully with one another. If we want to have freedom for ourselves, we have to extend it to others. Pro-choice advocates, though, predicted that the ruling would enable fake clinics. Quote, this empowers those who insert deception and abortion stigma into health care, a decision which has an outsized impact on women of color, low-income women, and other marginalized communities who have barriers to quality, comprehensive reproductive health care. A team from Repro Action, an abortion rights organization, said in a statement. Willie Parker, the chair of Physicians for Reproductive Health, said the Supreme Court failed to recognize, quote, the threat that fake women's centers pose. As doctors, we know it's important for pregnant women to have all of the information and resources they need. No one should use deceptive or manipulative tactics to prevent someone from learning about abortion or contraception, and no one should delay women from getting care, he said.
For us, the image of a modern woman is one who values life and does not kill the unborn child. And I believe a good role model for us all was the First Lady, Melania Trump, visiting the children's shelter. The Washington Times on Friday, June 22nd, 2018, by Dave Boyer and Stephen Denon, had this little excerpt that I will read. First Lady Melania Trump made a surprise visit Thursday to a shelter for illegal immigrant children in Texas amid the furor over President Trump's rescinded family separation policy, expressing her desire to see the children reunited with their parents, quote, as quickly as possible. Mrs. Trump traveled to the facility in McAllen, Texas, to thank law enforcement officials and social service providers for their work during the burgeoning crisis and to put a compassionate face on a political dilemma for her husband's administration. They are scared without their families, Mrs. Trump said of the migrant children. I want to thank you for your hard work, your compassion, and your kindness you're giving them in this difficult time. I'd also like to ask you how I can help to these children to reunite with their families as quickly as possible. Of course, while she was visiting, the Justice Department asked a federal judge to rewrite the court agreement that Republicans say created the catch-and-release policy leading to the family separation crisis at the border. We really applaud our First Lady, and we can tell by the continued vitriol of the MSM against President Trump to the point of absurdity that he has to be on the good side. And we do ask all of you to keep praying for President Trump and the First Family. We don't know what George Soros' Open Society people and the Weathermen and all the violent Antifa are up to. Lou, what did you hear about Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
In a little small article in the Washington Times, June 27, 2018, Secret Service to guard Sanders' home. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders will soon receive Secret Service protection, multiple networks reported Tuesday evening. Citing, quote, two sources familiar with the decision, unquote, CNN said the protection will start soon, possibly Wednesday. NBC News reported similarly, as correspondent Peter Alexander tweeted that, quote, the Secret Service will begin providing security at the home of Mrs. Sanders on a temporary basis, unquote. The service told CNN, quote, for operational security purposes, the Secret Service does not comment on its protective operations, unquote. In the days since Mrs. Sanders and several members of her family refused service at a Lexington, Virginia restaurant, because of her job with the Trump administration, Democrats have become increasingly vocal about there being no need to be civil, in public or private, to Mr. Trump or members of his administration. That was by Victor Morton. And I might add, I heard today that Maxine Waters was saying that much of the same thing. You don't have to be civil to Trump people. They don't deserve it. Basically, that I'm paraphrasing you, Chris. And that's the statement by what was often known as Kerosene Maxine.
As she comes out of her million-dollar-plus home and makes these statements about egalitarianism, we can know that things are really on the move. And when I said how absurd it is, some of these attacks on Trump, Time Magazine's perennial coverage of him in their covers, you know, one time it was Stormy, then his hair was on fire, and now this time we were laughing because we think they went too far and it was counterproductive. They had the July 2nd cover with this small, very appealing Hispanic child of about age 3, really weeping, just crying its little heart out, looking up at this towering man. And the towering man, of course, is President Trump. But the problem was he had such a paternal, grandfatherly look on his face. It just showed the decency and the kindness, so it backfired. You know, lies will always backfire. You can't keep the truth hidden forever. You truly can't. The next important thing that has happened, again in the Washington Times, Wednesday, June 27th, 2018, another victory. Justices uphold Trump's travel ban. Security policy applies to 8% of world's Muslims by Stephen Denon. President Trump's travel ban policy is both legal and constitutional, the Supreme Court ruled Tuesday, delivering a massive victory to the White House and dashing hopes of Democrats and activists who hoped the justices would join the resistance. Instead, the court, in a 5-4 ruling, said the president has broad powers to control who is admitted to the U.S. The ruling said those powers are strongest when the president is acting on national security grounds, and in this case, Mr. Trump gave sufficient justification for the need to restrict entry from some uncooperative countries. Lou, what about those Somalis? Refresh the listeners up there in Maine in the Kennedy Park, I think in Lewiston, Maine?
Yes, over the past couple of months, there have been several incidents where Somali immigrants, I don't know if they're legal or illegal, I don't know if the government up there knows, but they have attacked people. One man was killed. There have been a number of injuries, and it's gotten to the point where it's so intimidating, a lot of parents just don't want to take their children to that park.
But you know that the left will play the violins, the sympathy card. They'll equate this to the incarceration of the Japanese in World War II. You'll hear that in this article. So we really have to be on guard, and we have to stand strong, and we have to pray a prayer of gratitude. Do you hear me, listeners? Pray a prayer of gratitude, because the mosques are still being built in America. The Muslim men are still being brought in by the Roman Catholic Church in Western Pennsylvania and enrolled in their colleges. The Lutheran Relief Services, they're bringing in immigrants. They're all working under the UN directive, really, this global government by stealth. So we're not out completely out of the woods, but this is a very, very important step to keeping your children and grandchildren safe in the generations after all of us. We must think about this, and we know that down there in Nashville, where wonderful WWCR is, there have been a lot of things that shouldn't be there with this Muslim problem. So we are alerting you people, not just in the South. Look up there in Maine. Lou, you would have never dreamed, would you?
No, for those of you that have never been there, and I was there as a young man, we used to take occasional fun trips up to Maine. We thought Maine was a nice getaway from more urban Massachusetts, where I grew up. Lewiston and Auburn are like twin cities in the middle of basically the wilderness in Maine. Maybe it's not quite so much wilderness as it was when I was a boy, but they're by no means big cities. They're small towns by most standards. And to think that this Muslim problem has come there, of all places in the USA, is staggering.
But you see, it's very diabolically clever, because the heartland of America is in the rural areas. You and I know that. We've lived in both. We've been in the city area of Maryland, and we can see how different it is out here on the Eastern Shore, the friendliness, the cooperative nature of the people, because they're still connected to the land. And when the New World Order robs people of their land and puts them into these high-rises in a city with a small green area, and they have to have their manufactured food brought to them, it will be a terrible day. So we really want to hold that back. We want to stop that. But at any rate, this article in the Washington Times for June 27th went on to talk about the Supreme Court and its ruling. The justices refused to hold Mr. Trump's tweets and anti-Muslim campaign statements against him. Bravo, I say. I'm interjecting, Elizabeth Cavalli, because we have freedom of speech. Our president should have that freedom of speech on the tweet, too. Back to the article. They said the policy, which now applies to majority Muslim and non-Muslim countries, is racially neutral. Not the Muslim ban, his critics had asserted. Quote, the text says nothing about religion, wrote Chief Justice John G. Roberts, Jr., who authored the main opinion in the case. Trump critics were enraged. Some said the ruling was evidence that the justices were motivated by racism. Liberal legal analysts said the ruling would go down in history among the worst ever issued by the high court. Now, I have to interject again. These misguided liberals, you know, if the worst were to come, finally, when everything is under Sharia law, I think their faces would just be shattered with, how did this happen? Why didn't we understand this? you see, unless there are that few who are just diabolically evil and want to destroy all of mankind except the very top elite. But at any rate, we have this reaction. Representative Zoe Lofgren, California Democrat, called it, quote, a stain on our nation's history. Boy, that was a big one, Lou. Don't you think that's a little bit overblown?
Yeah, this whole comments by the left is so highly exaggerated. They just don't hold water at all. You know, comparing this to the Japanese internment during World War II is the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life.
This is called propaganda. They want to brainwash the more susceptible people, the people who have been tuning into the blue light televisions that are in the trance too long. But for Mr. Trump, however, the article says it was a long-awaited stamp of approval. The Supreme Court ruling was a tremendous victory for this country and the Constitution, he told reporters at the White House. Do I hear some clapping? Yes, we should be applauding this. In the near term, the decision means the government can continue to severely restrict entry of citizens of seven countries that Mr. Trump and his cabinet deem to be uncooperative in sharing information about their citizens with the U.S. More broadly, the ruling could shape the ongoing immigration debate. The court ruled that Congress has clear powers to deny entry to broad categories of people. Lawmakers gave the president wide latitude to carry out those powers, and Mr. Trump was, quote, squarely within the scope, end of quote, of his authority with the travel ban. Quote, under these circumstances, the government has set forth a sufficient national security justification to survive rational basis review. We express no view on the soundness of the policy. Chief Justice Roberts wrote, we simply hold today that plaintiffs have not demonstrated a likelihood of success on the merits of their constitutional claim. The court's four Democrat-appointed justices dissented. Two of them, Justices Stephen G. Breyer and Elena Kagan said they would have asked lower courts to go back and see how the administration is carrying out the policy to prove whether it is constitutional or not. Justice Sonia Sotomayor went farther in an opinion joined by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. They compared the decision to some of the darkest rulings of the court's past. Here we go, Lou. Such as the World War II era decision upholding internment of Japanese Americans for national security reasons. You know, Lou, I have to interject. There's a big difference. The Japanese were American citizens.
That's right, and they were already here. We're not saying, you know, we should be rounding up people and putting them in camps. We're saying if they are from countries that pose a direct threat to this country, we should have the right to keep them out.
And Chief Justice Roberts made that common sense statement about this. A sufficient national security justification to survive rational basis review. You know, that's one reason we're here in this program. We do want to use our intelligence to analyze things. We want to see through things that are lies, through things that are deceptions. God told us in the Bible we're supposed to do this, and if we're watchmen, we have to applaud this decision, or we would be suicidal, waiting for the country to just be taken over and go under Sharia law. This battle isn't over yet. You and I know that. In your hometowns, you have to be very watchful. Remember how Captain Darrell Everhart told you, we were talking about the wonderful book Crescent Moon Rising by Paul L. Williams, that a lot of these mosques come in rather surreptitiously. They start out as a storefront, and they have a certain word. Lou, you don't remember that word either, do you? It's an Arabic word, I believe. But this thing means mosque. So you see, they're converting it into a mosque. It's an insidious kind of deception, and that's what Dawah means. Our late friend Carol Matriciano, with her wonderful documentary, Islam Rising, portrayed this so well. You know, we just can't look at people and take them as what they appear to be on the surface and what they say on the surface. We can't believe these words that they want to assimilate when we look at Maine, Kennedy Park in Maine. We see the actions. We see the actions in Sweden and Germany, the men raping the native women. But now let's get back to what these dissenting justices said. Justice Sotomayor said Mr. Trump's tweets and his campaign statement should be used against him because a clear line can be drawn from his campaign-era proposal for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States to the travel ban policies. And you see there I'm interjecting again. That isn't what the policy is. It's not total and complete shutdown. It's a certain number of countries who wouldn't obey the reasonable regulations. But she went on to say, Sotomayor, taking all the relevant evidence together, a reasonable observer would conclude that the proclamation was driven primarily by anti-Muslim animus, she wrote. Can that be proven, Lou? Animus means hatred.
No, of course not. You can't get inside the president's mind and find out what he was thinking at the time. Plus on the, you know, the statements he made during the campaign. All kinds of statements are made by politicians during campaigns. They may not reflect the actual total thinking of the person making the statement. And once this person gets into office, they may reconsider things when they get better knowledge, when they have access to all the, you know, apparatus of government to analyze situations.
And it wasn't just President Trump in his own mind. This was a policy that a number of people brought together. And again, in the Orwellian times that we're living in, black is white, white is black, good is evil, evil is good. So you see, according to Sotomayor's thinking, this shows anti-Muslim animus. But a realistic person living here, watching these Muslims being brought in there in western Pennsylvania on buses at the governor's permissive maybe request. Anyway, he's not stopping them. They're being brought in. As we see the encroachment there in Maine, the animus is toward us, the people who won't assimilate. They killed somebody in that park, in Kennedy Park. That is not the same as speculative thinking about animus in Trump's mind. It's a whole different ballgame. But Sotomayor warned of pain and suffering among American Muslims and said the court was effectively establishing them as outsiders, not full members of the political community. Again, we have this pull, this propaganda pull on our heartstrings. We are to pity the multicultural people who've come in here while our own people are struggling. Is that really fair in a country? And I heard the Baltimore Classical Station, WBJC, with their NPR-like commentary, that they were going on this whole same thing, that, you know, we're not giving people the freedoms they should have, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what is right?
Well, I think we have to keep in mind the Supreme Court is ruling on a power of this and any other president. They're not saying we like this, we don't like this. They're saying the president and all presidents down through the centuries have had this power. I'm sure that Franklin D. Roosevelt might have kept some Germans out of the country during World War II. He suspected as saboteurs. I'm sure that other presidents at various other times have invoked similar powers. So this is what the Supreme Court is saying. The president, any president, has this power, pure and simple. It's not a matter of animus. It's not a matter of some president has an opinion about something. That has nothing to do with it.
And the forces that would like to take us into anarchy and violence and chaos so that they can seize power, we know that this happened once before in the White House, the plot to seize the White House back in the 1930s. General Smedley Butler would not go along with it. What a national hero he was. But these forces that are trying to cloud your thinking and my thinking, They've succeeded with some people. Some people cannot see the danger. That's why we're here, because we're told in Ezekiel 33 that if we do not blow the trumpet, the blood will be on our hands. Lou, and I know we have to tell people in the radio, some of our friends have never listened. They didn't understand the dangers of the smart meters when they had the chance to opt out right here in Maryland. No, it probably wasn't anything bad. It didn't matter that Olaf Johannesson, a neurosurgeon and a neurosurgeon in one of the Scandinavian countries. He said that the meters actually harm the DNA. What is the DNA, Lou?
Well, the DNA is a basic building block of life. The DNA are long strands of complex chemicals that determine whether you're a monkey, whether you're a dandelion, whether you're a human being.
And if those things are interfered with, Take Back Your Power, a wonderful DVD, perhaps you could find it online, showed people standing in front of the meters, and within a couple minutes, their blood cells were all clumping in an irregular manner. Now, if that's not affecting your DNA, I don't know what is. You could tell a few people about chemtrails. That would really make them look, oh, who are you? What are you doing? What is this conspiracy? You could tell them about GMO food. Some people won't listen to that. But you see, those of you who are thinking people, those of you who are Bible-believing Christians, and you are relying on the King James Version that does not pervert the gospel and omit important parts and rob the divinity of Jesus in the Scripture, and maybe you can't find a church. We can't. We cannot find a church that will honor God's Scripture without having it rescinded, changed, mutilated, obliterated. Those of you who are listening, we want you to stay well. And we really think about this summer. Lou and I are a little bit overweight. Now, not grossly, but 20 pounds maybe a little more for Lou. To be optimal, we need to get that weight off. We need to cut way back on the sugar. But we are not eating milk products that have the hormones, the RBGH, in them anymore. Back when it came out in the 1990s, Europe didn't let their people have that kind of milk. No, and the cows had pus on their udders. Do you really like to be getting milk like that, eating cheese that is made from that with the hormones? And the corn. We went into a little supermarket this summer, and it said local corn grown 35 miles away. So I thought it looks pretty much like my dad's original corn. I think it might be all right. And I got 6 ears. And then I just casually asked the owner of the store, this isn't genetically modified, is it? He said, oh, of course it is. He says, you can't find any Silver Queen anymore. There are any seeds left. Farmers don't have that. It's all right. I eat 5 ears a day. And I thought, well, okay, good luck. The late pastor Carl Sanders told us on our program, he said growing up he could go out on his dad's farm and he could eat the raw corn right out of the field, and it was just great. He says, you try that with some GMO corn and you'll get sick as a dog. Alex Jones reports that with some of these genetically modified products that they did the studies with the rats, and in the second generation, I believe it was, their testes grew on their head and hair came out of their ears. By the third generation, they were sterile. So you see, if you're smart enough that you don't want to be a part of this plan, and if you don't do anything else, get the fluoride out of your water. Please do that. God wants you to honor the temple that you have so that you can stay in this fight, so that you can survive, so that you can help your children and grandchildren know the truth. Maybe you won't tell them everything because some people can't handle it, but you, in an indirect way, you can certainly tell them about organic food versus genetically modified food. You can certainly get them to get pure water. There are things that you can do, and you should pray about this because you have a responsibility to your family to take care of them. You truly do. And those who won't have things visited back on them. We see this every day. We truly do see this. What you sow, you reap. But back to Chief Justice Roberts, he was countering Sotomayor when she said that this was establishing the Muslims as outsiders, not full members of the political community. He countered that the latest version of the travel ban applies to just 8% of the world's Muslim population. He pointed out that Mr. Trump's original seven countries were all singled out by the Obama administration and Congress, and that the updates were made after extensive work by his cabinet, further undercutting anti-Muslim arguments. Still, Mr. Trump's rhetoric did appear to trouble some justices who upheld the travel policy. Justice Anthony Kennedy, who signed on to the majority opinion, wrote a separate concurring opinion saying that while the courts can't necessarily police all of the words of government officials, they should be careful not to go too far. An anxious world must know that our government remains committed always to the liberties the Constitution seeks to preserve and protect so that freedom extends outward and lasts, he wrote. Now, I, Elizabeth Caverly, think that is a valid statement, and we could apply that to this situation, the unfortunate situation of the immigrants separated from their children. That was not a good thing. God did not like that. That has to be changed. So, you see, that went too far. There have to be certain common things that we know are part of worldwide morality, and that would mean not separating the small children, especially from their own parents. So back to the Washington Times article, the ruling marked a major validation for Mr. Trump and his aides, who consistently predicted that the lower court rulings would be overturned and his policy would be upheld. Mr. Trump called the ruling a profound vindication following months of hysterical commentary from the media and Democratic politicians. The ruling dashed hopes of Trump opponents in Congress and the press that they could rope the courts into playing referee to the president's policy decisions. Instead, the majority said its role is not to decide whether the presidential actions are wise, but rather whether they are legal. In this case, they said the move clearly was legal. The courts won't save us from Trump. Now, here we have some opposition again. This is Elizabeth speaking, the Center for American Progress. Now, again, black is black. No, black is white. Good is good. No, good is evil. The Center for American Progress, huh? Or is it the Center for American Destruction, I ask? The article says it's a liberal think tank, and it said the courts won't save us from Trump in its daily Think Progress memo. The current policy is a third iteration of the travel ban. Mr. Trump announced the first one by executive order a week after his inauguration, creating chaos at airports as people from seven countries subjected to the ban were turned back. Immigrant rights advocates ran to the courts and received an immediate halt to the policy, launching 17 months of litigation. Mr. Trump revised his policy in March 2017 by cutting Iraq out of the list of banned countries and issuing more narrow restrictions, as well as laying out a more thorough justification for why the policy was necessary. Some courts upheld that policy as a valid exercise of presidential authority, but others ruled that it still violated constitutional rights of Americans and legal immigrants who deserve to have foreign relatives, business associates, and others be able to visit them in the U.S. The Supreme Court, weighing in last June, overturned some of the lower court blockades and allowed parts of that ban to go into effect. Mr. Trump issued another revision last fall, updating the list so it now covers North Korea and Venezuela, two non-majority Muslim countries, as well as Chad. Sudan was dropped from the list. Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iran, and Somalia remained on the list. Chad would be dropped from the list in April. The latest version of Mr. Trump's policy includes a number of waiver provisions, giving citizens of affected countries a chance to make a case for being allowed to enter the U.S. Chief Justice Roberts pointed to that waiver process as more evidence that the policy wasn't a Muslim ban, but rather a carefully crafted security plan. We have another thing to applaud Trump for. We have the Washington Times headline for Friday, June 22nd. Trump's meeting with Kim declared a success. Poll finds most in U.S. approve of Singapore summit. The polling data Buck's widespread criticism in the U.S. of the lack of details in the accord Mr. Trump reached with North Korea leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore last week, as well as growing impatience for tangible evidence that Pyongyang plans to dismantle its nuclear arsenal. You see, you can't fool all the people all the time, Abraham Lincoln said. No, people can sense that this is a president who doesn't want us destroyed by nuclear devastation and annihilation. No, he doesn't want it. And so we're having a little effect worldwide. We have, from the Washington Times again, June 22nd, we have a picture of Angela Merkel, and we have a man there. He's middle-aged. He's balding a little bit. He is poking his finger right at her chest. And it says, ultimatum. German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer is one of two members of the government giving Chancellor Angela Merkel 2 weeks to develop a plan with European Union partners to reform the bloc's asylum policies. And the headline was, open borders threaten to end Merkel's leadership. Asylum hostility rises internally across EU. German Chancellor Angela Merkel's momentous decision 3 years ago to open her nation's borders to refugees has come to define her political career. Now the policy is threatening to end it, as biting internal politics over asylum increasingly surface. The threat to Ms. Merkel's approach is emanating from an unlikely source. Members of a key Bavaria-based conservative sister party to the Chancellor's Christian Democratic Union, CDU, are pressuring her to sharply draw down the open borders policy. In a push spearheaded by German Interior Minister Horst Seehofer and Bavarian Minister President Markus Söder, the CDU-allied Christian Social Union has given Ms. Merkel a mandate to take action within 2 weeks. If she fails to develop a plan with European Union partners to reform the bloc's asylum policies by that time, Mr. Seehofer and Mr. Söder say they will take unilateral action and begin implementing a policy to turn away asylum seekers at the German border. Such a development is likely to deal a crushing blow to Ms. Merkel's fragile centrist political coalition just 3 months after its inauguration. And we'll get a little bit more on this. Lou, I think Time Magazine's columnist Ian Bremmer had a little encapsulated thing that just sharpens it a little more.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel hasn't had much chance to enjoy her fourth term. In September elections, her party took its lowest vote share since 1949. Partly because of an open-arms approach to Europe's migrant crisis that cut into her popularity. It took her 6 months to woo reluctant partners into her coalition. And though crime and migration are both down, Merkel is in trouble once again. Interior Minister Horst Seehofer, leader of the more conservative Bavarian Party in coalition with Merkel, expects a tough challenge in this fall's regional elections from the far-right Alternative for Germany, AfD party. That means he wants to get tough on immigrants, including his plan to allow German police to turn away migrants at the border if they have already registered in another EU country. For Merkel, this undermines the principle of EU burden sharing by forcing southern countries like Italy and Greece to take in more than their share of migrants. But if Merkel fires Seehofer, his party will leave her coalition, and she will no longer have a majority of seats in parliament. That could mean new elections, and polls suggest her party is even less popular now than in 2017. Merkel may well survive this latest challenge. Seehofer knows a government collapse followed by new elections will only strengthen his far-right rivals in Bavaria. And Merkel still has solid-looking support within her own party, and a national approval rating of 50%. Asylum applications in Germany fell from about 720,000 in 2016 to 200,000 in 2017. Despite President Trump's false claim to the contrary, crime in Germany stands at its lowest level since 1992. But this is the wrong time for a weakened Merkel. At home, divisions within her coalition will embolden the far-right opposition to push harder on migration. In Europe, she wants leaders to consider a bloc-wide solution at a June 28th summit. But with Italy's new government turning away boatloads of desperate people, the migration issue is entering a new and dangerous phase in European politics. And it comes just as Merkel, the leader best able to force compromise, is in the weakest position to forge one.
That was an update to an earlier article that we had from Ian Bremmer, and it was in the spring, the re-election of Hungary's far-right leader should worry Europe. And if we go back and look at that article a little bit, we can see that the forces of populism are rising. The people in Europe, God bless them, they are important to our Lord. He wants England to return to Christian belief. We must pray that the darkness spiritually will be lifted from Europe. And politically, we really are happy for leaders like Viktor Orban. And Ian Bremmer said Viktor Orban and Fidesz, his party, won this landslide victory on April 8th, and it gave them a supermajority of seats in Hungary's parliament. And he said that Orban's win marks a victory for his brand of illiberal democracy, which represents a direct challenge to EU rules and values. It's a system of limited checks and balances in which the law exists mainly to protect the leaders and their mandate. Judges and journalists are expected to promote and protect the rights and choices of those who win elections. Orban, who has championed this illiberal democracy, according to Ian's categorization, will be building his next government. And he said at that time he was building it, and he might pass this controversial Stop Soros law. And that was named for civil society activist and Hungarian native George Soros, and it could ban the work of NGOs without government approval. You see, those NGOs, those are non-governmental organizations, and that's a term, a polite term under the UN for what we would call illegal government organizations and representatives. It was put there to undermine local government, like county figures and state figures. That's the purpose of NGO, that the dark purpose of it. There may be some good NGOs. But anyway, this could ban the NGOs that are posing, quote, a national security risk. And so they talked on how Orban might tighten up things in the media and the business leaders who didn't go along with this anti-illegal migrant invasion. So at any rate, there's a little more background. And this is that Orban will continue to insist that Hungary, where less than 6% of the population is foreign-born, will never admit migrants, quote, with different cultural characteristics and backgrounds. Orban may also move to write rejection of the EU quota system into Hungary's constitution. In response, the EU could cut funds to Hungary from the Union's next budget, but tougher punishments, like stripping the country of its EU voting rights, require a unanimous vote from EU members, and East European states aligned with Hungary will vote no. Hungary, Poland, and probably Italy will now have Eurosceptic governments. That's a new term. That's spelled capital Eurosceptic governments that can undermine a push by France's Macron and Germany's Merkel to reform the Eurozone, manage relations with Russia, and find a lasting solution to the migrant crisis. The Union's East-West divisions are becoming harder to ignore. So in other words, this globalist publication, Time Magazine, has to admit that the forces now are becoming so accentuated. They're expanding. This is a worldwide movement, this desire for populism and nationalism. But we can hear these ugly statements, and as I was saying there, I think there were several made on WBJC, the classical music station of Baltimore, as they reported the news. Whoever wrote that propaganda that they were supposed to spout, it was about Trump being this biased, ugly, racist, white nationalist, bigot, that type of thing. Those aren't the exact words that they used. But we're being portrayed as something we're not. Those of us who are white Christian conservatives I don't know any who fit that stereotype. We're not skinheads. We're not radicals, extremists going out and bombing abortion centers. There are plenty of just ordinary middle-class people who want to work and who want to believe in Jesus. Isn't that right, Lou?
That's absolutely right. And they see the good things this country has stood for. And they've seen that it all too often, when you put power into some big organization like the European Union, you risk a kind of a takeover. And before you know it, you're going to have all the laws of liberty dissolved that this country has stood for. A lot of people who are, you might say, conservative, think that liberty is not a bad thing. You don't want to give it up to other entities away from this country, you know, indiscriminately. You want to be careful what you do.
And we have to ask again for God to give us discrimination and to understand things. And one of the things is, again, our health. And American teenagers, they have heard about smoking cigarettes, how harmful they are. But you see, they're being taken in by vaping. So if you have a young teenager or you have a grandchild, you might want to bring that information to them that it's not as good as it might appear to be. And it's something sneaky. When the kids have these things that they use to vape with, this sleek Juul, I don't know whether I'm pronouncing it right, capital J-U-U-O-L, Juul, I guess, device. It's a Juul, all right, has captured 60% of the e-cigarette market. But the features that make it so attractive to the general public also make it easy for teenagers to conceal. So it's just like a little cylinder that they can hold. And the exhaled aerosol is less visible than cigarette emissions. There's a mouthpiece on it, you see. Assorted flavors, nicotine liquid, and flavors like mango and creme brulee, they come in prepackaged pods. There's a, quote, smart inhaler. With no temperature settings or start buttons, a simple inhale triggers the vaporizer. Easy to hide look, the device resembles a flash drive and is about the length of a cigarette. USB charger, the battery can charge in an hour via a USB port. And now, the statistics are not really very good, because though the aerosols contain fewer harmful chemicals than smoke from burned tobacco, they still have, most of them, I think, have the addictive nicotine. Again, this is from Time magazine. They say that many do have the nicotine that is addictive, and there's conflicting research on whether they help smokers kick the habit. And some studies have also shown that kids who vape may be more likely to use other tobacco products. So, you know, here we are. We're just going from the boiling water, the frog in the boiling water, to being burned at the stake. It's not really that different. And one of these times we will be giving you a lot of information on everything that we have about marijuana. But January 2nd, 2018, we had the Californians lining up to legally buy the recreational pot. This was sort of a milestone. We would call it a milestone in ignorance as watchmen. And in one more way to take down our country. And Canada now is going to let people get it by mail, aren't they, Lou? And what did you hear? You heard something new.
Well, apparently in California, the time is about to expire when there would not be strict regulation of the marijuana. And so a lot of questions arise as the state is going to crack down on marijuana's harmful additives, that sort of thing. So this bears watching, too.
But we thought that was sneaky. What? You remember how you told me that you thought this was like a way to make it look more attractive, that the government is taking care of us? See, they're getting all the harmful stuff out of it. So in a reverse kind of psychology way, it promotes it. Well, we do thank the Lord for all of you, and we know that He is with us. We had to walk out of a play at a theater because it showed a grandmother, it implied her molesting this coterie of young boys. And then we saw Jesus on the cross, and he was vilified by Charlemagne in the play that he had killed all these pagans for this terrible Lord. It was terrible. So at intermission, we walked out, and we got a wonderful sign from the Lord that he was pleased. We're to separate. You two separate from the evil this week.